Blog Talk Radio.
I love it, you know.
Number six, set a deadline. Now, your subconscious mind uses deadlines as forcing systems. They drive you consciously and unconsciously toward achieving your goal on schedule. Anais Nin once said that your subconscious can work against you because when you set a big goal, you're disrupting your subconscious. So your subconscious mind will tell you that it's not possible and will attempt to sabotage you. And you know the way your subconscious mind sabotages you? It tells you, you can't achieve this goal. You don't need to write it down. It's okay, as long as you know what it is. If your goal is big enough, set sub-deadlines. If you want to achieve financial independence, you may set a 10 or 20-year goal and then break it down year by year so that you know how much you have to save and invest each year.
So a person says, well, what if you set a goal and you don't achieve your goal by the deadline? It's just a guesstimate that enables you to focus. You say, we'll be at your house at 8 o'clock. That's your focus. You may get there at 5:02 or 5 after, but you've got a deadline. You've got to focus. We cannot live without deadlines.
If for some reason you don't achieve your goal by the deadline, simply set a new deadline. There are no unreasonable goals, only unreasonable deadlines. Number seven
is identify the obstacles you will have to overcome. Now, this is very important because with regard to obstacles, there's always something that stands between you and your goal. The rule is if there are no obstacles, it is not a goal, it's merely an activity. You know, lunch. What are the obstacles between here and lunch? There are no obstacles. We go for lunch at 12:15. That's an activity. So therefore, if there are no obstacles, there are no goals.
Now, there's a very powerful principle called the principle of constraints. This principle of constraints is, I think, revolutionary. And what it says is that there's always one limiting factor or constraint or bottleneck between you and your goal that sets the speed at which you achieve your goal. So the question is, once you're clear about your goal, and let's say it's a financial goal, is what is the bottleneck that holds you back? For example, I will say to a company, what is your goal? Well, it's to grow in sales and profitability. What's the constraint? More sales. If you had more sales, would you achieve the goal? Yes. So what is the constraint behind that? Better trained salespeople. Maybe it's better products and services. Maybe it's better pricing. Maybe it's new markets. But keep asking, what's holding you back? What sets the speed? Now, the 80-20 rule applies to constraints. Fully 80% of the reasons that are holding you back from achieving your goal are inside yourself. They're not on the outside. Average people always blame their problems on external circumstances. Top people look inside themselves. The things that are holding you back are usually the lack of a skill, the lack of a quality like self-discipline, or the lack of a particular knowledge or skill, all of which you can learn or acquire. Only 20% of the reasons you are not achieving your goals are on the outside, so always start with yourself. Number eight is to
identify the additional knowledge and skills that you'll need to achieve your goals. You know, of course, that whatever your level of knowledge and skills is today, it's rapidly becoming obsolete and it has to be replaced and upgraded quickly.
Remember, to achieve a goal that you've never achieved before, you will have to develop skills that you've never had before. You'll have to do things that you've never done before. So what are they? And here's the great breakthrough thought that changed my life at the age of 23. Is that all business skills are learnable. Especially, here's the question, ask yourself, what one skill, if I was absolutely excellent at it, would help me the most to achieve my goal? What one skill? And this is one of the greatest questions of all. This is the life changer for me. What one skill? What one skill? And if you can imagine you could take a magic pill or wave a magic wand or buy a hypnotic program and play it all night, and the next morning you'd wake up and you'd be absolutely excellent at any one skill, what one skill would have the greatest positive impact on your life? What one skill would help you the most to achieve your most important goals?
And you know, the great thing about this question is you know the answer. You know what it is. You say, woohoo, if I was good at that, I'd save myself years of hard work. People say, geez, it'd take me a week, a month, a year, 2 years to learn that skill. I know what it is, but so what? So what? I'm sorry, did anybody give you a guarantee, a little warranty certificate when you came out of the womb and saying, here's your warranty, guarantee, life is going to be easy for you. There's going to be flowers all along the way. No. Life has always been hard. Life will always be hard. You can make it easier, but life will never be easy. It'll always be hard. So don't expect things to be easy. Only no-hopers and thumb-suckers and people with no future expect things to be easy. If you expect things to be easy, you look for things to be easy. If you look for things to be easy, you'll never realize that to accomplish great things, you have to work hard. Number 9, make a plan. Make a plan.
And plans are very simple because what you do is you just make a list. You start off with a list of everything you'll have to do. You already identified it. You know what the goal is. You've broken the goal down into sub-deadlines. You've identified the knowledge you'll require, the obstacles you'll have to overcome, the people overcome, the people whose cooperation you require. Make a list of everything you'll have to do and then organize the list, first of all, by sequence, which means what comes first. What do you have to do before you do something else? And then second of all, by priority, which is what is more important and what is less important. And once you have a list organized by sequence and priority, you have a plan. Now you have the two great requirements for winning. You have a goal and a plan. Now, does it take a little while to do this? Yes. But once you have the goal and the plan, the very act of completing them programs them into your subconscious mind. We, in our advanced coaching programs, we teach people to write down and create goals and plans. And then once they've done it all, 90 days later, they come back. I say, how many of you reviewed your goals and plans in the last 90 days? Most of them didn't do it. How many of you achieved your goals and plans? All of them. But the most amazing darn thing, because by writing them out, they've programmed them into their subconscious mind, which passes it off like a baton to the superconscious, which then works 24 hours a day to bring it into their lives. And the most remarkable coincidences occur. That's why people with goals and plans, according to the best research, accomplish 10 times as much as people without goals and plans. 1,000% more than people without. So write down what you want and make it clear so that the universe can help you get it. Number 10.
Visualize. This is the most powerful faculty you have, is the ability to imagine your goal as already created. See your goal as a reality every day.
Emmett Fox, who I mentioned before, wrote a book many years ago called The Mental Equivalent. Actually, it wasn't even a book, it was a pamphlet. And this little pamphlet is one of the most profound pieces of writing in history. It's just unbelievable. I'd read Emmett Fox for years, and someone came up to me and said, have you ever read The Mental Equivalent? I said, no, I've read all of his books. Well, it's not that easy to get, so I got it. And what it does is basically says is you have one responsibility to your universe, is that is to create within your mind the mental equivalent of what you would like to see on the outside. If you will do that, all the mental laws that we've talked about and many more that we haven't had a chance to go into will all work. Just like click, 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 they'll all work, and what you want will appear on the outside by the law of cause and effect, belief, expectation, attraction, correspondence, and so on. Your job is to give to the universe an absolutely crystal clear picture of the goal that you want, which you can only get by thinking it through and writing it down. Number 11
is back your goals and plans with persistence and determination. This is so important. 95% of the goals that you will set for yourself in life, according to the research, you will attain as long as you persist. As long as you become unstoppable. Because if you don't stop, you must attain your goals. The primary reason why people don't attain their goals is, first of all, they don't have them, and second of all, they stop. Your persistence is your measure of your belief in yourself. And here's the most important point, is every time you persist, your belief intensifies. When your belief intensifies, your desire intensifies. When your desire intensifies, your motivation intensifies, which makes you even more driven to persist in the attainment of your goals, which increases your self-esteem and your self-belief and your motivation and your desire, which causes you to persist even more. So your persistence is your measure of how much you believe it's possible. Every act of persistence strengthens you and increases your ability to persist even more. Everything you do builds habits of success that lock in deeper and deeper and which ultimately guarantee your success. Remember, finally, there are no real limits on what you can accomplish except for the limits that you place on yourself.
the ladder of success. Living in a world where every day my strength is put to the test. But I face that just with courage, and I just won't be discouraged. I'm determined, you see, to reach my
possibilities.
Now I've run across so many things that could block me, but I made up my mind. Much more than I can see, and so much that I can become. That's why I'm reaching by the sun.
I see my possibility. Just woke up and found them here in me. Nothing but green lights ahead of me.
I'm looking for the dollar track. Get ahead, I won't look back.
I see my
وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له له الملك وله الحمد يحيي ويميت بيده الخير وهو على كل شيء قدير. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi ta'ala wa barakatuh. I've got to unmute my co-host before we can proceed. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Let me get straight here. Let me get straight. Let me get your lovely greetings again.
Alhamdulillah. You don't have the stream yard going.
I don't, huh?
Yeah.
Now we do.
Started.
So we can act like we're just getting started right here. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadar Rasulullah. What's going on, Miss Regal Purple? Got that royal sash, got that sash going on. Got that, you know, a measure of that
it's
Wakanda.
Good. It's good. It's good. It's good. Today is as well. Mm-hmm. How you doing?
All right. I'm doing great. Alhamdulillah. Just, you know, the synchronicity and all the, you know, the confirmations keep
on
flowing.
It's just, yes.
Man, look, I hit on something today that's like, man, it's just so much. We have to talk about it. But it's it's big. I mean, it's big. So I can't
I feel the energy of it being big because as I was listening to, because I didn't get a chance to go to the clip. I didn't know this was a continuation of what you shared last week. But it's just so, you know, of course, it's in alignment, right? And yeah. When I get excited about something, you know, my emotions well up. My eyes get a little water, little haze in there because I was like, okay, Rob. Because right when the moment when you think you want to stop, Allah will be like, no, hold on. Bam. And you'd be like, okay, I'm going to keep going. Yeah, I'm going to keep going. I love those.
That's it. That's where we are. I mean, truly, that's where we are. So we got a lot of conversation coming, not just today, moving forward. Alhamdulillah.
Yes,
so I'm going to get out of the way. And let you bring what you have brought for today. Yes. All right? It's all on you. As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Alaykum as-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأشهد أن محمدا رسول الله السلام عليكم to our blog talk family as well as those joining us online via Facebook and on YouTube. I am Haja Kamila Shuaib. I'm the CEO and owner of Love Is Always the Subject, and I am so thoroughly excited to be on this journey with those who have been consistent with being here with us, and to welcome those who are experiencing us for the first time here at Wealth Creation Preservation. Before I really dive into the talking points that I want to share today, I am learning my rhythm with being here, being in this space. Being in this space as far as like a part of Wealth Creation Preservation, over the years, you know, my father has, you know, has always just presented moments like, hey, you know, we gotta do this. Hey, you know, schedules and life and things that's going on never presented itself. But I've come to realize and understand that it was really a moment for me and maybe even for him, but I'm taking accountability for me in this journey that I wasn't quite ready, right? I wasn't quite ready for the responsibility of being in a space and sharing my inspired thoughts as well as things that I may research or my system of understanding wealth and business and so forth, right? And so now here we are in this time, and I am, the more that I have continued to be consistent and to show grace to myself in being in this environment and sharing space with such an amazing mind such as you, ma'am, that it's like, okay, you find your unique footing, right? I was listening to a podcast this morning, and it was just great. I just found this podcast, and this just happened to be the first episode that came on in the random shuffle. And it was an interview with Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, a former NBA player. He apparently has a documentary that's on Showtime, so they were having this conversation with him. And in this conversation, as I was listening, because I remember when, you know, when it was such a big thing, and his experience with the NBA, and not no different than what Kaepernick was experiencing, that he had the double up of being Muslim, right? And what that looked like for us to be a part of this conversation about who we are in America and so forth. So his conversation gave a more extensive backstory that the media, whether they had access to it or not, we didn't have access to it, right? And so when you hear the full unfolding of him and his response, and mind you, I still haven't seen the documentary. I don't have Showtime, but I'm going to make it a point to find this show, this documentary. It's like, oh, I get it, right? And then even how many of us within the community or Muslims responded to it with the lack of knowledge of the backstory that led to this moment. And, of course, the cultural evolution of being in a season where Kaepernick is more familiar, more recent as a part of what has already taking place. You know, my generation, like many of the younger generations, they don't even know him, right? They immediately associate Kaepernick. They don't even know his story because they were, you know, elementary school. They were children, right? So it was like Black History Month. What? Like, I never heard of this cat before, right? And so I say that to say that there is a part of us in this business space, right, that there's some unlearning that has to happen, unlearning. And this unlearning is very uncomfortable, right? And but it's necessary because there are ideas and ways of thinking and being that has imprisoned us, imprisoned our mindset in a way that is stopping us from growing and achieving the things that we have all the rights to. That it puts it, and I'm not saying that this is what Allah is doing, but this is how it feels to me, that we keep waiting for Allah to convince us that we're supposed to have a good life. Like, I need you to convince me, right? Yet we're just sitting still because the convincing may not serve what you want it to look like, right? So it's like, well, until this, you know, until I get this magical check and all my debt is paid, and all this, then I'll know I'm supposed to have a good life. It don't work. It just don't work that way. It does not work that way. But if you want to utilize that as the proof, right, then the proof is, I'm sorry, I'm fidgeting with my earpiece. It's just what it is, you know. My ear has never fit earbuds. It hasn't. If I had a technology passion, I'd probably design a new kind of earbud. But that's not my ministry. So I work with what I got. Moving on. So when we have this understanding of, like, let's talk about the debt, a clean slate, right? The moment we chose Al-Islam as our way of life, all debts were paid. Talking about your experience, your whatever the trauma and generational habit, all of these different things that have come up in your life, the moment you said, I'm with this way of life called Al-Islam, and it makes sense to me, and this is what I'm going to build my life on, you now have a clean slate. You have an 850 credit score. Like, you can buy anything you want. It's done, right? Yeah, it's like, so imagine if someone pays off all your debt and you keep going back saying, okay, well, now I need you to buy me my car. Now I need you to give me money to do this. It's like, well, hold on. I cleared all your debt. There's nothing that can stop you from getting and achieving and doing the things that you want to do. You cannot say that debt is the reason why you can't do it, right? So this new life, this way of life that we call this way of life, Al-Islam is a way of living. You believe Al-Islam is my way of life. So what does that way of life look like? We say the term. What does that look like? What is that in action, right? That means I'm satisfied with my life. That means that I am passionate about family and community. That means I'm happy. I feel good in this body that I have. That means that I love to be around other like-minded individuals. That means I'm charitable. That means I'm full of prayer and stay in the space of remembrance. This is a way of life, right? Why would Allah give me a way of life and then I'm miserable? The math ain't mathing. For me to say this is my way of life and I'm choosing to not be happy, I'm choosing to be depressed, I'm choosing to live a life of chosen struggle, when Allah said, I give you the, yes, you're born in struggle, but there's a solution to it. With every difficulty comes ease. Like, that's the law, right? And then you see other individuals who believe and what it is that they have, and they're living a life that, from your perception, just from, because you only see surface, right? We don't get the full story. Follow me. You get what I'm saying. Like, sometimes people will get hung up on, you know, how many spots on the calf, and it's like, you missing the point here, sir. Like, stay with me. That when you are pursuing this way of life and you see the way that other communities are building and doing business and, you know, the numbers of within the congregation, how many prosperous members of the congregation, the schools and the edges that they created, and you see all of those things, and then there's a part of us that has to take a level of accountability to say, do you really believe what it is that you say you believe? Because they're doing this without the book that you believe in, without the life example of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. They're doing this without it, right? And you have it. So I know it's kind of a little tough pill to swallow, but this is a part of the medicine for us to be well, to get well, to want better, right? And to show up in this space that says, I believe in this way of life. I believe that the laws are written and the instructions are written for me to have the best experience. So then you have to ask yourself, why am I not having that experience? That is the mercy. That's Allah's mercy saying, okay, you're asking the right question. Let me show you. You need to do more of this and less of that. You need to release these type of relationships and increase these type of relationships. You need to love on yourself more than how you have been, you know, exerting yourself in a way that is not building yourself up. So when I look at the behaviors of certain millionaires, because some stuff, you know, Allah inspires what's good. Everybody got access to Allah. Whether you label yourself Muslim or not, everybody got access. They all have access to it. You might not like them, whomever they may be, but everyone has access to Allah's mercy. You can't block that. Nothing you can do to block that, right? So in understanding that part of it, one thing that I have recognized about the millionaires, the wealthy people in the game, they invest in their ideas. They invest in people, and they invest in themselves. This era of, you know, I'm a transformational life coach, right? The coaching industry, the consultant industry, the education, courses, and learning how to do a thing is like people pay for that, right? And as an entrepreneur, I have entered this year saying, I'm about to do the behaviors of the millionaire. I'm going to invest in the coaches. I'm going to invest in the classes. I'm going to invest in time, meaning I must set aside a certain amount of time that I see about myself spiritually and mentally, and it's going to be consistent, and I'm going to write the plan, because I'm successfully, the term is successfully clues, right? And in doing that, I see who's in the room and the conversations that are happening in the room. And I'm like, this is not different than what I have been raised with within my community, but the difference is they really believe it. And they execute on that belief. They feel it at their core, right? So there's this education and the science and the information that the Imam shares with us weekly, multiple times a week. Let's be clear. People are paying $10,000 an hour to sit with other teachers to tell them the exact same thing. $10,000 an hour, right? And so there's this thing of having skin in the game. You move different when you invest in a thing. And I'm gonna spin the block back on this unlearning, right? We have, as a community, learned to not invest in our vessels of knowledge. And the man said it very clearly. Yeah, I was young, and I remember this, that we do not value scholarship. That, you know, we're a community that doesn't value scholarship. Imam Muhammad, Rahimahullah, said that, right? Because he understood that this level of scholarship, when you always have access to it, it's just like, oh, okay, I just get this. But you don't believe it, right? So you have it. It's sitting there. It's, well, yeah. But there's a belief that has to activate, the spirit of belief has to activate this knowledge that moves the vehicle forward to the next level, right? And so this idea that we're not to invest in people or invest in the knowledge of a thing, that we're not to value the gift that Allah gave. Like, this has been a gift, right? And so we have to unlearn the psychology. Like, I didn't grow up with this ill feeling about sharing, you know, tithing and people having to, well, the preacher got this and the da-da-da, you know. So when the cat comes up, you get this little, you have this trigger trauma response, right? Because it's just like, oh, right? And you know what I'm saying? And I could say a whole lot about that, being a child of the Imam, but, you know, we are, first of all, it's not too late, yet we're running out of time. Okay? It's not too late to start a new thing, to do the new thing, to pursue the business. I don't care if you're 60 years old, and I don't care if you're 70 years old. It is not too late to start the project. Because you don't know what will be the boom factor. You believe that Allah is in control of all things. You believe that Allah wants you to have the best things in life, right? Yes, yes. Okay, activate that and let's see. Activate it and let's see, right? Because many times there is this shame around wanting to expand and do more, but this idea of the wealth is to provide us the opportunity to explore this world that we're living in, right? To explore and invest in our youth by creating educational institutes that don't rely on governmental dollars where they can dictate what you can and cannot teach, right? So when you are in a position to be able to fund experiences that don't require us to have to look for everybody else's grant in order for them to say, yeah, you can do this, but you can't do that. Oh, you got to include these people. Oh, you can't do this. Then you are still not in full control over what it is you're seeking to build, right? So for us to get to this space where we understand the value of the investing. And investing, you know, I'm not going to say that it's not money. It is. It is. And we are going to be held accountable for how we have utilized the currency, the valuables that we have gained in this life. And at no point in time have we used those seeds to plant into this earth, engage the earth in a way that it exceeds our living, our life, right? Where we start to lay the bricks of the Islamic institutions that last as long and build up and out like the Yales and the Harvards and so forth, right? But if you aren't even a part of one brick of that, you can't just sit back and just be like, yeah, I'm a Muslim. The Muslims did that. Okay, yeah, all right. Did you lay a brick? Let's start laying bricks. Let's start getting serious about this and not look for an emotional charge, like, yeah, let me get excited. You know, well, you know, the richest Muslim was Mansa Musa. Okay. All right. So there's your proof. Where you at in the lineup of that? Like, what are you learning about how he built his wealth? So they said when he went through Egypt, he bankrupted the whole city because he was giving people who were impoverished a whole, he was giving them gold, not a little piece of gold, a brick. He was dropping bricks of gold, bars, dropping bars, right? So where it was like, okay, here I'm planting a seed, I'm investing in the people. And by investing in the people, whatever it is that you produce, whatever that garden produced, meaning the person, I believe with every fiber of my being that God is going to invest in me. So where are you investing this time, effort, and energy? It's like, well, I just wanted to. No, the debt was paid when you chose Al-Islam as your way of being. It's not too late to start, execute, to activate this way of life and all of the jewels that's just sitting in there. It's not too late, yet we're running out of time. So what is the plan? How are you investing in yourself beyond just how are you getting in the room? Because it's only so far that YouTube can take us. It's only so far until you get yourself in front of the teachers or utilizing the knowledge that is being shared and given to you so that you can move forward. So it's like you can't use that as an excuse. Allah has eliminated all excuses, all of them. You can't say that it's illness. You can't say if there are zero excuses left, none. You could find many multimillionaires who have zero legs and one arm, and they're still out there doing it and making it happen because they have a level of wisdom. They have an understanding. They invested in themselves and in the people that will help them to change their mindset to do and activate on what it is that they believe. Tons of stories like that. What is yours? What is that thing? And are we choosing it? Or are we just kind of like, you know, Allah will provide. Okay, you're absolutely right. Allah has provided. Not will. Not, you know, it's not sitting back waiting for. It's already, Allah has already provided all the things, right? And that's what gets me excited every time I get up in the morning. When it's something that I want to do, it's like, okay, I need to post this content. I need to figure out this course. I need to read this. I mean, it's like, okay, all right, a lot of like, yeah, I see it. Okay, I'm going to activate that. And I'm like, oh, that's uncomfortable. I don't know if I feel like reading this much per day or sitting and doing this. But it's like, ma'am, you asked for what it is. Here's what you have to do. And when I do it, and I exert that activity, then I see the glimpse of it. And you see that little twinkle, and I'm thinking of the seven dwarves chopping away at in the cave, right? So as you're chopping away, it's exhausting. But underneath that, you see just a little bit, it's just this little moment of a glimpse of it. And it's like, oh, okay, I gotta keep chipping away at this dirt. I'm exhausted. But I have to keep, but I see the glimpse, and I have to believe that. Count of Monte Cristo, and then I'm going to close it out, right? This is just chipping away. That in the movie, if you haven't seen it, it's one of my favorites. I just keep it on rotation. Sometimes I'll watch it once a month. He's chipping away. You know, they're trying to escape the prison, right? And as he was chipping away, he gets close, and he sees something, just a, like fine as hair roots in the dirt. Plant roots, and he explodes with excitement because now it's like, I've been chipping away, I ain't seen no life, no, because that means that if life is coming in this way, that means that wherever that root's up, there is a blossom on the other side of that root. But they've been chopping away for like 8 months. just to get out, that making a thing of it and learning in the midst of it. So what are you chopping away? Are you just sitting back and just saying, okay, Allah, you know, I'm sorry. When will this moment happen? Activate and execute. I gave you all the things. Chip away till you find those roots. And when you find those roots, know that the vegetation, the plant, and the garden is on the other side of that, that will provide you with all of the things that you need, that will provide you your freedom. With that, I will call the email back into the room.
Alhamdulillah. Thank you, as always. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to go ahead and move on down the road, and, you know, you can do your journaling thing, because I got a lot to say to you. Got a lot to say to you.
Let's go.
All right, so we gone. All right. I'll see you on the other side, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum. All right. So let's go ahead and get this set up here. Because we're going to continue with what we had begun last week. We are continuing to address the power of a plan you can believe in, right? So the theme for these past couple of weeks, you know, is it is about the power of a plan, and literally, I'm just trying. My effort, my intention, my motivation is to get us to greatly and more so appreciate the metaphysical power of a plan. But let me go ahead and make this announcement. You should go ahead and register for the Empowerment Weekend with myself and Imam Dr. Abdul J. Nuruddin down in North Carolina. Is going to be a Zoom presentation, 4 hours for 2 days, on the 18th and the 19th of March. This is just before Ramadan. And what Hajo was just telling you, I know that there are those who have paid tens of thousands of dollars for what we're sharing. But alhamdulillah, rabbil alamin, Allah takes care of his servants, really. There's no question about that. But that is to tell you more so the value of what you are faced with, what you're exposed to, what's been handed and being handed to you by the grace of Allah. But again, you know, I want to be real, real clear. There's absolutely positively no salt, no vinegar, no shade, and nothing and whatever. I love to do this. You know, the bliss, follow your bliss. Believe, locate, institutionalize, specialize, and succeed. That's automatic. That's what happens, right? And part of my conversation is to say, you know, it's like if you may be looking in one direction or looking down one avenue, expecting your blessings to come from that direction, and then Allah says, it's like Allah taps you on the shoulder and you turn to left. Oh, look at that. So mashallah, that's my life. There's no boast, and I don't want to spoil it even by mentioning it. You know, don't cheat yourself, treat yourself, get registered. Go to empowermentwebinar.eventbrite.com and be a part of that Empowerment Weekend. My focus is, you know, Quran and metaphysics, the reality of you, reading signs for natural guidance. These are really just cup holders because no telling where it's going to go, but these are at least little handles you can get a grip on. So, okay, it's going to be something in that arena. Imam Dr. Nuruddin, Understanding Nutritional Deficits, Importance of Enzymes, Treating Your Gut, Psychosomatic Activity. So it's sort of like a tandem, you know, physical, metaphysical, et cetera, from two imams in the Association of Imam Wahid bin Muhammad, who have for decades been steeped in what they are sharing. So you do that. you will be pleased, inshallah. Okay, let's go back to what we have. The bottom line, we need a plan we can believe in. This, every one of those things, I don't care how common each one of those terms are in your thinking, the point is that it has to truly meet the full formula, a plan, yes, but then you have to be, you have to believe in the plan. Last week we spent a lot of time on it. I want to move quickly through this so that I can get to what's new for today. Essentially, it's about the scientific correctness of the plan. That is, how are you going to believe in it? Well, the more and more there's scientific, and I don't mean that in the cliche-ish kind of manipulative way the term scientific is used, but I mean it in the sense of true to the rules and laws of nature and the whole picture of reality as Allah has revealed it. That's one of the places where we get distinguished. Our ontology, write that word down if you don't know what it is. Our ontology is based on and in what Allah has revealed in the Quran, what the Prophet has told us. So we are dealing with truth and reality, word haq. That's where we're coming from. It's not coming from scientist Joe and scientist Sue, et cetera, as a beginning. Scientist Joe and scientist Sue, when they bring what they bring, it, if it squares, literally, with what Allah has revealed, it can become a detail for what Allah has given us the truth of in abstraction, in the Quran, et cetera. And so, therefore, we can use it. And the Prophet told us, the other part of our guidance, the Prophet says, the bit of knowledge is the lost property of the believer. And wherever they find it, they have more of a right to it. So, and the Quran, they encompass nothing of his knowledge except what he pleases. So whenever I hear something that's true and scientifically accurate, et cetera, from them, I don't fall down in praise of the scientists. I praise Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala who has allowed them to come to that knowledge, to discover that knowledge, and to deliver that knowledge, make it public, and now I get my inheritance. I get my share of that, and then pay it forward, right, by sharing it in this forum such as this and as the one I just mentioned before, the webinar weekend that we're going to have. Okay, so the scientific correctness of the plan and how much you believe in it, that's a part of it. So when you have that, in Islam it's called yaqeen. So when you have this yaqeen about your plan, you have this conviction about your plan, and that's where the persistence comes in, the regulation and the regularity of your behavior in concert with that plan. So your behavior in alignment with the plan is a reference for how much you believe in the plan. And your persistence in the action that the plan calls for is also a reference for how much you believe in the plan. A, if you don't act on the plan, you don't believe in it. But if you act on the plan, but then you give up at a certain point, then that means also you don't believe in the plan, right? Now, yeah, at another time, we can go into the details, but let me give you a short aspect of it right now. And that is the nature of our imagination. I may have more to say about that as we go on. The nature of our imagination is a grace from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala because everything that we create begins in imagination, right? And that imagination gives us also the opportunity in the feedback loop. Let me stop. Make sure I'm not missing something significant here. Okay. Maybe not to show me how to put that. I'm busy now. Signal on that. So there we go. So where are we at? So in terms of the plan, your belief in the plan, the imagination. So this is the beautiful thing. It's like you can imagine something. Okay, so then you start acting on it. Then you get some feedback. And then the feedback says, that kind of is going too far to the left. Okay, well, then you can imagine doing something differently. So you can modify your plan. You still have the same intention, But with that feedback, you make an adjustment. And you don't throw the plan out. You just make an adjustment. And in that adjustment, then you can, inshallah, God willing, you get more confidence in the plan as you update the plan in your continued progression towards the goal. Okay, but the point is you have to have this way of regulating and having this regularity in your behavior in concert with the plan. And yes, as we just said, you have to keep updating the plan. All right, so but the bottom line is have a plan that you believe in and then stay in touch with that plan, stay in touch with the feedback for the plan, and then there's the action. Now, last week we went all the way through this, but for those who may just be coming with us, I'm just going to hit this real quick and not focus on the Lugha Arabia for these sessions, but we'll just say, in the neurobiological level or on the neurobiological level, convictions, which is yaqeen, deeply ingrained belief, activates the mechanisms of our inner resources relative to the goal. You can write this down. You already heard the word, but I want you to follow up with some key things here. Placebo, you've heard of placebo. There have been examples of people who had knee injuries. They had knee injuries and the need to have those knees corrected, and they took one group and put the group through the actual operations for the knee correction, but then they took another group and put them through, psychologically speaking, their total experience was that I'm having this operation, I'm having this matter fixed for me. And so they did everything, that is the operators, the surgeons and the experimenters, they did everything in appearance that could be read and presumed by the patient that they had done the operation. And that person, those persons who actually had the operation, they got the benefit, but also those people who didn't have the operation in this particular experiment, they also had experience, I mean, literally having athletic experiences and using the limb in the way that they would normally use it as though all the corrections had been made. But no, the surgeons only went through the motions and they only took the patient through the steps such that in appearance they felt like the whole thing had happened, and so they thought it was all corrected. But nothing changed in the case of those who responded. How did they respond so favorably? It's called the placebo effect. And the placebo effect was simply because they actually believed that they had the operation that would correct their circumstances. So what did the actual correcting? What did the correcting was their believing that it was corrected by some operation. So the power is in the belief. So if you can reach a level of conviction, a deeply ingrained belief in whatever it is that you're speaking of, but we're talking about your plan, that's going to activate the mechanisms for you to cause your inner resources are going to go to work on that. That means all the chemical, biological, neurochemicals, et cetera, that needs to be involved in causing whatever needs to be corrected to be corrected. Those things go to work, but what flipped the switch? What flipped the switch was believing. Let me see. I think I got a nice little image for you on that right here. Oh, yeah, that's it, right? So it's like when we believe, we hit the on switch. And there's an on switch inside of us, metaphorically, analogically, whatever it is, actually, neurologically, psychochemically, or what have you, physiologically, whatever that switch actually is, it gets flipped. And when we believe, we feel positive regarding the current feedback. I told you that you, as you continue to act and do, you get feedback. The feedback, if the feedback coming to you is positive, and I can tell you the parietal lobe, I can't tell you that much, the parietal lobe in your brain is the part that sends the message to you in consciousness that you are situated in space where you want to be situated in space, and that also relates to your goal as well. So if I have a goal, whatever, to get to the door, right? You know, and I start moving toward it, the parietal lobe is simply there stating you know, it acting at this very deep unconscious level. We don't think about all these processes, but the parietal lobe is saying, oh, everything's good, everything's good, everything's good. And so to the extent that you are moving towards your goal, no matter how small the reward from your system is, you are being rewarded at this neurological level for the progress that you are making towards the door in the example that I gave. But the same thing applies to the degree that you're trying to achieve or the business that you're trying to be successful in or whatever, the suitor that you're trying to get with, what have you. It's all about your belief and your response to the feedback, that feedback giving you a positive thing, sort of saying that, yeah, my mental map is working, my perception of what I'm doing is acceptable, and therefore you continue to allocate physical and mental and spiritual resources to realize the possibility. That's the regularity. That's the regulation. That's what keeps you moving, because all the feedback in your progression, all the feedback is saying, you're good, keep it going, keep it going, keep it going. Like somebody on a construction site and somebody's moving this heavy thing on a crane or whatever, or a truck or whatever, and say, okay, a few more inches, okay, hold on, they're moving back a little bit. They're giving these direct. Well, that's what happens inside of us. How much resources we devote to whatever action that our plan is calling for, as long as we believe in the plan and the plan is updated for the nature of the situation, we keep making progress, we continue to be positive about it, and we invest those resources mentally, physically, spiritually in order to make it happen. That's anybody who has succeeded. They have succeeded because they have done, whether they did it consciously or unconsciously, they have done what I just said. But on the flip side of it, there's the nocebo. You have the placebo. The sound is like plus, right? But it's P-L-A-C-E-B-O, placebo. But then there's the nocebo. Nocebo is just like I said, nocebo. No, this is a no. This is not a plus. This is a no, right? And so that means, and that happens just as naturally, just as unconsciously, just as, how can you say, dependably, as long as our neurological system is operative and healthy to that extent, then it's that no. The system will say no, right? If it's healthy and things are positive, the system will say yes, right? But if we don't believe in whatever it is that we have planned and the goal that we're trying to achieve and the success that we think this plan can have to bear on the achievement of that goal, if we don't believe it, then we feel negative. We have a negative attitude towards our own plan, right? And with regard to the current feedback and the mental map and the perception, and if we're not satisfied with it, then we won't invest any resources physically, mentally, or spiritually towards the realization of that plan that we have demonstrably said, I don't believe in the plan, all right? So all this relates to what we need to do in terms of getting ourselves straight on that. So. All right, and then we consciously and unconsciously behave in alignment with the plans and our goals until we realize what we are committed to. That is, when all these things are correct. For example, this constant example, where the moonshot, right, the moonshot, we landed on the moon, but 97% of the time, the capsule, rocket, whatever it is, it was off the trajectory to the moon, but it landed on the moon. Why? Because it goes off the trajectory, course correction. Goes off the trajectory, course correction. Goes off the direction, boom, 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 boom. 97% of the time it's here and here. 3% of the time it's online, right online, right? But with just that 3%, including the course corrections from left or right, you reach the goal. And that's what happens with us. The plan has to stay. The goal remains. It's about updating and course correcting whenever that's necessary. And then in that way, you realize what it is that you are aiming at. Okay? So that's the critical thing. Now, 53, 37, and 42, these, I'm just going to read the English because we got up to, I think, verse 39 last week. So let's get through this and get to the other. So an expression of it is, auzubillahi, and of Abraham, who fulfilled his engagement, namely that no bearer of burdens can bear the burden of another, that man can have nothing but what he strives for, and that the fruit of his striving will soon come into sight. Then will he be rewarded with a reward complete, that to thy Lord is the final goal. Brother and sister, this is a plan. This is a formula. This is an algorithm for achieving whatever it is that you're talking about achieving. It is the truth, literally, from the Creator. Let's move on. So now, abstract, right? Abstract is truth without detail. It's the truth, but it's low definition. Low, you don't have details. Abraham fulfilled all of his obligations. He fulfilled all his engagements. Excuse me. So what does that mean in quote-unquote in practical terms, I'll put it that way? Be a person of faith, science, and integrity. All right? The picture of Abraham, moving star, moon, sun, that's someone who got the science. That's how he got conviction. That's how he got certainty. That's how he got yaqeen. And God, by saying that he did this for Abraham in order that he would have conviction, yaqeen, certainty, that's God also telling us. And this is what you have to do to achieve that same certainty. All right? And the picture is he acquired the science of what it is that he was pursuing, right? The image that we get of that, and it is that image for us. I mean, it is the truth that he was trying to know who God really is, right, and who God really was. So that's what he was seeking to know, right? And one of the main things that also does tell us that we meet God through our movement and understanding of the nature of creation. Through the movement and understanding, moving through an understanding of the nature of creation, that's how we get to know Allah, right? So I don't want to go down that road. It's a lot. But, you know, simply put, there's knowledge in everything. There's knowledge in everything. I'll try to make it brief. Whatever. You look at anything in your room, right? You look at anything in your room. This book here, right? That book, you know, by using the book, I kind of set you up for thinking that, you know, yeah, I know there's knowledge in the book. Okay, how about this? This is an object, right? There's knowledge in this object. There's knowledge in this object, right? And the knowledge that's in this object is everything that it took to put it together, and the highest, best use of this thing is a statement of, for those who are not seeing, I'm looking, I'm holding up a coaster. It's called a coaster. You put it under glass so you don't, a cup or whatever, so you don't get marks on your coffee table, okay? Okay, so, and the highest, best use of whatever anything is, that's what it was created for, right? And when you keep following all that back, it's like that person, whoever that was, and there's no single person. I gotta tell you, look up this thing called I, personally, pencil. Look that up, I, pencil, right? Look it up. You'll have a lot of fun with that. What that eye pencil is about is saying nobody knows how to make a pencil. Nobody knows how to make a pencil, right? And they're just using that as an example. And you might say, well, it's all kind of pencil. Yeah, people know how to make pencil. I got a pencil right here, right? Let me see if I do have a pencil. Yeah, I got a pencil. So you look up iPencil. Pencil, that's a pencil, right? Let's take this eraser out because that's a whole other thing, right? Somebody decided this would be, this eraser here, this would be nice for a pencil. So somebody had another problem. I think like Aja was saying, the earplugs, not earplugs, but the earphones or what have you. She said, yeah, if I had to wear with, I would invent another thing. Because it's a problem, right? If it's a problem, then if you have the knowledge of how to solve the problem, then you go about solving the problem. Okay, well, this little added extended eraser was saying, okay, we need to do better, but the eraser is good on this pencil, but this would be better if we had another eraser on it, right? So that tells you something about the person who decided their attitude about people, what have you, because they want to make things convenient, comfortable, and beneficial to somebody else. And so, therefore, you should know that everything that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has created is a sign of His mercy. It's a sign of His mercy. It's a sign of His grace because He has created these things whose highest best use is beneficial to us. You can start with the entire universe, and you can talk about our solar system, and you can talk about the nature of the earth and all of that. This is a small piece of this great universe. Enough of that. So the idea of iPencils, what's the thesis? The thesis is that, okay, it said nobody can make a pencil. Well, yeah, somebody can make a pencil. Since we got, okay, how many people were involved with making this pencil? Was there just one person involved with making that pencil? And so by the time you go into every element that makes this pencil what it is, it's practically infinite. And no one person knows how to make or is able to make this pencil without other people and other knowledge that they don't have. Okay. So the point is, that's how it is in the nature of reality, right? In the nature of reality, it's like you have to get the details. You have to get the details of knowledge and science for what it is that you're seeking to accomplish. Let's move on. So 5337, so Abraham is that kind of person. It's a person of faith, a person of science, a person of integrity. Rich, meaning, got to keep going. Verse 38, namely that no bearer of burdens can bear the burden of another. You have to accept personal responsibility. We went through some of the details on this yesterday, but you have to be responsibility. Right? Responsibility, the ability to respond, right? You can't be reactive. You can't be a reactionary. You have to be someone that's responsible. You have to fulfill all your obligations. Quran says no bearer of burdens can bear the burden of another. And in other places, the same line is followed with, even though they be nearly related and calling out to you. Meaning that life, the nature of life is self-responsibility. So what about people who are irresponsible and people who refuse to take and accept responsibility? It's a terrible world that we are in when those people, especially when leaders, take that position. But the idea is that this is a part of the formula of succeeding in whatever it is you're thinking about succeeding. And it begins with being a person of faith, science, and integrity, followed up also as being someone who accepts personal responsibility. It's the saying that if it's up to be, if it's going to be, it's up to me or something. If it's meant to be, it's up to me. That's it. You have to accept responsibility. We went all through the idea of keys. Every key that you have represents the responsibility. Responsibility is the key. So whenever you see a key, you see a responsibility, right? And that is to say also the key is responsibility. The key is responsibility is the key, and the key is responsibility. So if you want to unlock possibilities for you, then the key is responsibility. Let's go to verse 39 of 53. It says that man can have nothing but what he strives for, okay? That he can have nothing but what he strives for, it means you have to set your goal. You have to set the plan. You have to have an aim. So you can't score a point until you have a goal. You can't score. How do you know how you get a point? So, okay, let's play this game right here. Okay, you take the ball, and now, okay, it's your turn. What's the point? What am I trying to do? What am I supposed to do with the ball, right? The point is you can't score a point until you have a goal, until you have a goal. And that goal for us in this discussion is you have to have a plan. You have to have a plan. You have to have something that you're aiming at. right? So, it says, blessed is he that desires nothing, for he will not be disappointed, right? It's like, it's that if you don't want anything, you don't have anything you're going for, therefore you don't need a plan and you won't get anything, right? So the idea is to set a goal, have a plan, and to also recognize as soon as you really, when you formulate it in your head, in your conscience, we're going to spend more time with this today. As soon as you form it in your consciousness, as soon as you form it in your mind, it comes into virtual existence. I'm going to spend some time with that. We're going to move on to get to that. But this is the part of the reality. Let me tell you this, brother and sister. You should know that I have, you know, sought after, researched, looked at, studied, et cetera, filtered, the kind of information that I'm sharing with you and from many, many sources. And, you know, by the grace of Allah, alhamdulillah, that we're able to, Allah knows best, to abstract from it what's very valuable. One of the valuable realities of what I'm speaking to you about is, see, okay, make a note of this one day. Inshallah, one day we're going to come to it. Maybe I don't know. I have to have a special weekend just for that and just with me. And that is, there's this thing called non-overlapping magisterium. It's a small letters acronym, NOMA, NOMA. So you can remember it. Non-overlapping magisteria. I'll follow what came to my mind right away after that. Some of you know about the Balfour. I believe it's called Balfour. Balfour Declaration, right? And if my memory serves me in this extemporaneous moment, that was the decision that was made to chop up Africa into these various colonies, Portuguese, French, British, whoever else gets a piece of it. Okay, French, you take this. Britain, you take that. Whoever else, they take this. Look that up. The point is, Africa was what Africa was, et cetera, et cetera. But then when the colonizers came, claimed, we discovered this, like Columbus, right? Discovered America, right? And the point is, they just, let's get back to it. That they cut up the whole country, divided among themselves, and this is the world has been living with that map, that division, since that time, with all the problems and the traumas, the colonialism, neo-colonialism, wars, and all that. It's all a product of responding and reacting to this Balfour Declaration. All right. So the point is that somebody in the world made a decision that this is what reality is, and therefore we all agree that this is what reality is, and so whoever agrees with that reality, then you're okay. Whoever disagrees with that reality, then you are an enemy and that you need to be destroyed, okay? All right, this NOMA, non-overlapping magisteria, was a decision that was made in the post-Descartes or inside the Descartes period. I think, therefore I am. And the point is that they decided that, okay, here's how we're going to cut this reality up. The reality is going to be this. Those people who are material scientists and who can use these methods of researching and establishing, you know, proofs for things, then that is what we will accept. But we'll stay over here and deal with the material side of life. You other people, you religious people, you, whatever kind of word you want to use, you people that deal with spirituality and all immaterial assets, okay, that's your domain over there. So So you guys deal with that. We'll deal with that. Okay, we agree? Okay, I'll stay out of your business. You stay out of my business. Okay? And there you go. So that world is yours. That this world is ours. You do that, and we'll do this, and not overlap. So the investment and the energy and the time and resources, et cetera, was given in to material scientists. Material scientists basically took the world because their life was driven more by the grasp of the laws of nature. Okay? Their drive was the laws of nature. So the more they acquired the laws of nature, nature's not resistant to man, right? And so the more those individuals, Industrial Revolution and so many other things, using the laws, the electromagnetism and you know, internal combustion engines, steam engines, et cetera, all that's over there. Religion, y'all stay over there. Okay, y'all deal with God and angels and the devil and all of that. And that's fine, okay? But don't bring any of that over here, right? So then all of that happens. Okay, so what happened is this is the dawning that's changing right now, most recently, explicitly so, is that the material science it is reaching its limits in terms of being able to hide what it doesn't know and can't know, and the harmful effects of unethical decisions that are being made in the attitude that says, if we can do it, we should do it, because there's no moral governor over what we do with our science, because religion is over there, science is over here. Progress calls for us to take the fullest advantage of whatever we are able to discover. Scientifically speaking, it's a grace, quote unquote, they wouldn't use that word. It's a utility for us, and it would be a waste for us not to use it. But the problem is, I'm saying now, the problem is, since the ethics is absent in your scientism, you are using your scientism, not to speak of those things that are falsely being called science and doing harm, et cetera. But even that you do call science, the uses towards which it's being put is not under the governance of some moral, spiritual, ethical system. And so therefore, the problem comes in the world. And God says, the problems that appeared on land and sea because of what men have done with knowledge, okay? So, all right, so what does it have to do with all the things that I'm coming up to? What it has to do with, that was a false dichotomy. This non-overlapping magisterium sounds good, cute, rational, wah, wah, wah. So there are people so there are those who took over and became the elite in the spirituality, divorced from science, right? And so therefore they were able to use their own schemes from a religious, ethical, spiritual point of view, not an ethical, a religious, spiritual point of view, while the others were able to basically take the world with their materially based scientific insight. Here's the problem, that the world has come to a place now where the soul's appetite, the mind's appetite, the spirit's appetite, so famished, so despoiled, so painful, so problematic, so hungry, that there are those even from that side who know that, look, this science is empty if it doesn't have the benefit of some moral, ethical, spiritual guidance, et cetera. Okay, I'm saying this is the day that we're in right now. And there is a phrase that is a very useful phrase to understand. It is, spirituality is the physics that we have yet to understand. I said it's a false dichotomy, the split between material science and spiritual science. That's a false dichotomy. In Al-Islam, there is no split between the material science and the spiritual science as it relates to reality, right? You have some false material science, pseudoscience, and you have some false spiritual science that's also pseudo-spiritual science. But there is a truth in material science, and there is also a truth in spiritual science, and they're not supposed to be divided. And what is happening, and, you know, this material that we're finding that it's been out for literally hundreds of years, but because of this false dichotomy that's been set up since the Age of Enlightenment, that this scientific spirituality, this scientific spirituality has just now and is barely in the full scheme of things, but it's getting bigger and bigger, been giving more and more and more credence because there are more and more genuine scientists who are believers in God, who are also scientists in the best sense, who are saying, nah, these things need to be together. These things go together. And they're not necessarily coming that way vis-a-vis Al-Islam. They're coming that way because the will of God transcends all of this, right? The will of God coming up through someone who believes in God and whose minds are turned on. One day we're going to talk about La'alakum ya'qilun, you know, for those who use their brain. God says, surely in this are signs for those who use their brain. And so you have people who use their brains, but who also have hearts that want to obey Allah, and Allah is guiding them to insights that pair with and confirm and point to the spiritual sciences. But the firm body of spiritual sciences and the like, for me, you know, I'm not saying that they're not out there somewhere. I don't know. But the formal canonization and the verification and the sense of certainty about the spiritual sciences that are true to the material sciences, that's a part of what's at work in the world right now. That's a part of what's at work with the world in the world right now. We are blessed because we have an epistemology. We have a way of how can you say assessing what is knowledge that is not dependent on the material scientific elite in this world, nor the spiritually scientific elite. They're not the spiritually elite in this society. No, we have the guidance of Allah, and yes, we have been blessed with a very special teacher in Imam Wahdat Imam, who has given us the questions and given us the patterns of thinking and the patterns of researching and the patterns of perception that show us what others, mashallah, don't see. It's, you can take it or leave it. It is. That's the case. So the point is that spirituality is the physics that we have yet to understand. Now, once we understand that, okay, and I understand what you say, we can say, and we understand why spirituality is a physics that you don't understand, and we can begin to make those steps towards clarifying and verifying that spirituality whose physics you don't yet understand. How are we going to do it, and how are we doing it? By knowing how to read the Quran on level 1, level 2, and level 3. What is it actually saying? What is it saying abstractly? And how to apply the abstracted meaning in real terms in the world, by the grace of Allah, inshallah. So let's move past this so that we can, inshallah, get something new in before time shuts us down. All right? So once you set a goal, that goal actually comes into virtual existence. So when God said, man can have but what he strives for, right? So all I can do is just tell you, stop, think about it. Man can have but what he strives for, right? If I said, I'm at home right now, right? And I said, man, I need a loaf of bread. I need a loaf of bread, right? So it's like, there's no bread in the house, right? But as soon as I said, I need a loaf of bread,
than in the world that we live in right now. It might be a little simplistic, but in the world we live in right now, we can pretty much be sure that that loaf of bread actually exists in some store nearby, right? So just go to the store and go get it, right? The point I'm trying to make is that when I said that I need a loaf of bread, this loaf of bread is a reality. I didn't say I need a flock of talk. I need a flock of talk, right? So it's like, question is, well, what is a flock of talk, right? But you can say in your imagination, if you know what it is you're talking about, I'm going to create a flock of talk, a flock of talk. Now, given that that flock of talk has potential in reality, right? It's like if I say, whatever, I'm going to give birth to a unicorn. I mean, literally, I'm going to give birth to a unicorn, right? Okay, that's not happening, right? It's not happening. Don't even try to say, well, no, stop. It's not happening, right? So that's not even in reality, even as a potential. But if you say flock of talk, and inside the flock of talk, you have a definition and a description of it for which there are component possibilities in reality, because you're thinking in reality, you're not just stone to the bone crazy. You're thinking about in reality. Well, then virtually that comes into existence by virtue of the potential for it as a reality whose elements are comprised of things that are real, right? So like, I want to be a trillionaire. If somebody said, I want to be a trillionaire, well, that's a possibility. That is a possibility. Yes. That's a possibility, right? There's some actually think that the Saudis are actually the trillionaires there, because nobody's counted their money. So the point is, that's the reality. Let's get to something new here. So the point is, it's a fact. The spirituality, that is the physics that we have yet to understand, this is a part of what is being expressed right here. Man can have but what he strives for, right? So the point is that In the realm of metaphysicality, in the realm of the unseen, in that realm, to imagine it is to virtualize it. To imagine it is to bring it into existence virtually. Let's move on. And so the idea is, I want to read through this faster because I want to get to verse 40. Hey, y'all, hang out with me for a few minutes after, okay? After the hour. All right, so there's a well-known adage that people don't plan to fail, people fail to plan. In quantum language, plan and planning is a mechanism, just as the Higgs field is a mechanism. We spent last week talking about that, but the bottom line is everything that has material substance, everything that has mass because of the Higgs boson. The Higgs boson pulls together the subatomic particles, and it gives everything. It just doesn't matter. Whatever it is you're seeing, feeling, sensing, what have you, it has such mass or existence or palpability, tangibility, et cetera, because of the Higgs field. It's real. That's what it is. But, again, there's the physical and there's the metaphysical. And what is in the physical is only a sign of the metaphysical. Iqbal, famous, knowledgeable Muslim, Alama Muhammad Iqbal, rahimahullah alayh, he says, the laws of nature are the garments of reality. The laws of nature are the garments of reality. What that means is when you see the way that the laws of nature operate, what they are showing you by virtue of their presence is that behind me, the law, behind me is the reality, right? So what you see operating in creation is a sign pointing to something that you can't see. It's a sign pointing to something that you can't see. So the Higgs field scientifically established it in and of itself as a reality in the material creation, the physical creation, is pointing to something metaphysical. It's only a sign. It does what it does in the material world, but one of the other things that it does in the material world is stand as a sign for the metaphysical world, stands as a sign for the intangible world, stands as a sign for the unseen world, so that you don't have to, if you have faith, it's like you don't have to, well, maybe it's there, maybe it's not there. No. Once you understand that the material is a sign pointing to the metaphysical, to, I'll go ahead and say the immaterial. The material law is pointing to the way it operates. It is a sign of what is operating in the unseen. So what do? You put faith in the unseen based on a reality that you trust that it is pointing to something unseen that operates just like the physical thing operates. The physical thing operates this way, and God has given you that physical thing in the way that it operates as a garment of reality, according to the scholar, as a sign to say, okay, and this is how it works. How what works? This is how the unseen works also. So these things that you see operating in your three-dimensional world, they're just a sign pointing to, and the non-three-dimensional world operates like that too. Now, what's the correlate between you as a human being and that unseen realm? This is where our spiritual, see, spirituality is a physics that we don't yet understand. So now I have to understand my spirituality in the same way that the material science understands the physicality. And I, as a believing person, I'm in a position to say, yeah, everything that you establish and can prove and verify experimentally, et cetera, by science is wonderful. It's beautiful. Thank you. I appreciate it. But that's not the end of it. The end of it is not what you can prove and do with something scientifically and materially. That's not its highest best use. Its highest best use is to take you behind the veil, as did Abraham, who went through the star, the moon, the sun, and got behind the veil and could see the reality. That is, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala brought him to the knowledge that transcends all of the material world. That's the invitation for us as Muslims. But again, that's quote-unquote level one, level two, as you might want to see it. But for us, the next level is, okay, interpret it, that is grasp, abstract, translate it, correlate it with the unseen, and then bring that behavior and faith to bear on your three-dimensional world. Act on the truth that the psi, the science, the sign led you to, oh, so therefore you say, that's true. This, that's true. Okay, now act on it. Act on it in the world and let the proof come that this is the truth. Let the proof come that this is the truth. And that's what happens. I got to give you one little element so we can at least say we got to the next verse. Okay, 5340, right? It says that the fruit of his striving will soon come into sight. Okay, it's just like, okay, I need that loaf of bread. Okay, well, do you know where a loaf of bread is? Do you know how to get the loaf of bread? What's your plan, right? So if you have a plan of how to get to the place where the bread is, and you can go there, then soon will what you strive for come into sight. It already exists, but it's not in your sight. It's not in your grip. It's not in your grasp. But you have a plan, and you have a vehicle, literally and figuratively, to get there. In our case, we're talking about a plan. Do you have a plan to get there? Because as soon as you imagine it, it virtually came into existence. Now, what you have to do is craft the vehicle, i.e. the planned behavior, that's going to lead you there. And so that's what 5340 is saying. The fruit of his striving will soon come into sight. He has to have regulated and regular behavior that's in line with the goal and the plan. So remember, it has to be a plan that he believes in, that she believes in, right? So once you have that, the only thing left to do is behave accordingly. That's it. If we fail to do so, it's because we have failed to stick with our plan. And if we fail to stick with our plan, we fail to stick with the plan because you're really saying by that behavior, I don't believe in it. Even if the plan is a good plan, if the plan is a true plan, but if you don't believe in the plan, then again, the switch is off. Which is off, no investment of resources physically, mentally, spiritually, and then you don't get it. Just how it works, right? Let's get to one more new thing before we go. We talked about control tense. I won't go into it right now because we've talked about it before. And this might be a little more than I want to go into right now. I'll do it right here. I really want you to hold on to the idea that spirituality is the physics that we don't yet understand. Hold on to that. Because the highest of the sciences, i.e. what is beyond science, haq is the truth in reality. Ilm is science. Ilm is science. Ilm is below haq. Haq is the reality. Ilm is the science. Science can always evolve and change. Whatever we know can be advanced. But whatever is true and real, it was true and real from the beginning, and it will remain true and real as it is. If anything changes about what you, quote-unquote, believe was true, modeling Abraham, what you believe was true, that was just the growth of ilm that did not change the haq. The haq remains and never changes. The ilm evolves. So here's a verse from the Quran. 65:3 says, وَيَرْزُقْهُ مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا يَحْتَسِبُ وَمَنْ يَتَوَكَّلَ عَلَى اللَّهِ فَهُوَ حَسْبُهُ إِنَّ اللَّهَ بَالِغُ أَمْرِهِ قَدْ جَعَلَ اللَّهُ لِكُلِّ شَيْءٍ قَدِيرٌ صدق الله العظيم. An expression of this is, and he, who? Allah. And he provides for him from sources he never could imagine. And if anyone puts his trust in Allah, sufficient is Allah for him. For Allah will surely accomplish his purpose. Verily, for all things, Allah has appointed a due proportion. You got to know. You can spend a lifetime on that. But I'll just simply say to you, you have this plan, something that you want to achieve, something that you have virtualized, something that you really believe in. That thing exists, but it exists virtually. How is it going to be done? You do the best you can to flesh out a plan. That's good. That's a part of believe in Allah and tie your camel. You do both of them. Believe in Allah, tie, that's good. To tie your camel, aqluha. Tying your camel, aql, is in the tying your camel. So you use your intellect as much as you can to develop a plan that you believe in, but don't commit yourself to saying that it's got to happen this way or it ain't right, because you are a believer, right? And as a believer, you expect Allah to do what he does with regard to your plan. Allah is the one who knows where everything you want and need is. Did you hear that? Everything you want and need, you are wondering, hoping, suspecting that this is what I need, this is what I want. But Allah, in his perfect knowledge, he said, I know you think you need that. I know you think you want that. But what you really need is this, in order to make this thing happen, right? And what does Allah do? What does Allah do? He provides for him from sources he never could imagine. You use your imagination, but you don't have an imagination that matches Allah's reality, Allah's haqq. Okay? So you set yourself up in your faith to be open to Allah blessing you from avenues that you haven't imagined. And this is what it says. So you haven't even calculated. These are things you haven't even calculated. Things you haven't even counted on. And that's how Allah does it, right? Allah will help us in our plan. But we have to have a plan, right? And we have to have a plan we can believe in. I'm going to jump away, since at least I can feel we put some new information there. And as Hadja says, I'm going to call her back into the room now. Hadja, are you with me? She will be shortly.
I had myself muted.
Oh, you do, and you're not on camera either. Oh, there you are.
Oh, okay.
No, we straight. All right, we signed it off. I'll take the last words and comments from you, my dear.
You know, how many lies? Like, you know, let us keep moving forward. Like, after you go, I don't really have many afterwords, afterthoughts. Add in. I was thrown off a little bit. I had someone in the neighborhood was selling candy door to door, so I was at my door. So had to get my little donation there. But, yeah.
That's good.
We get.
Yeah, get the blessings where you can. That's it. All right, well, we're going to call it for this one, inshallah. We'll take it a little further next time. Thank you, everybody, for being with us. Oh, wait, I see some hands here. I'm gonna take them because I think I can trust them. Georgetta, salam alaikum. Georgetta, you got something to say? That's an accident.
Yeah,
waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Is that it?
She's going one.
That was probably asking.
All right, we're gone. All right, let's try this.
Going one.
That was probably
five
asking. 10. That was probably asking.
5 10. All right, we're done.
All right, let's try this one. Going one. 5 10. 5 10 8 5 9.
All right, we're done.
All right,
let's try this. 5 10.
All right, well, that's it. I got to stick to my original plan. Don't click no new buttons after we done. Love you, baby. Everybody,
love you more,
have a wonderful evening. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah.